We have an important, some might even say controversial, topic for today. I don't particularly love controversies, and I don't plan on saying anything that I think is controversial. But obviously the issue of women in Megillah reading, and more specifically whether women can read the Megillah for men, for themselves, for other women, women's minyanim, these type of topics obviously have been controversial topics for the last few decades. And like most controversial topics, I find that the people who speak the most and the loudest usually know the least. And most times when people are talking, for pro or con, I'm not picking sides at the moment, pro or con. And usually people speak, they don't really contribute anything really meaningful. They just kind of raise the temperature. So rather than adding to the heat, I'd rather add some light. And hopefully we can clarify and understand the issues, whatever the conclusions either will reach or you think personally makes more sense or less sense to you, or you are more or less comfortable with. That's a separate point. But hopefully, at least, as we always try to do, we'll use the sources and the Torah and the Halacha to guide us. And then, well, you know, we'll speak a little bit. Certainly, you can't do a topic like this without speaking about some meta or some hashkafic issues that certainly relate to issues like generally the role of women and interacting with shul and public spaces, and we'll try to get that. I'm not looking to escape or avoid anything. You can try to nail me down or anything to that effect. That's all fine. But hopefully we'll be able to do it in a productive and a responsible way that respects not only the topic and the sources, but obviously the emotions, which sometimes can run right very high in a topic like this. Basically, the shir is divided up into two halves. The first, the way it worked out, just I think more or less coincidentally, is pretty much the first half of the source sheet, going a little bit into the second half, but basically the front versus the back of the source sheet. And the front, I think, is probably going to be the more surprising part of the shiur, if you will. And then the back is the part that you're actually really coming for and expecting. But, as you know me, I like to be methodical and build things in a very logical, and I think in a good way. And I don't think you can do the back without we first doing the front. And I'm going to stop speaking in code. And therefore, what I mean to say is, the first part of the shiur, which I'd like to speak about, is not only what is a woman's obligation to hear Megillah, but in a more surprising way, and as you can see from an entire front page of the source sheet, there's a very big discussion in the classical sources about women reading Megillah for men. That's actually a real question. Even before we get to the issue of women's reading for each other or for themselves, what about women reading for men? That's actually itself a big discussion, and understanding that will help us understand the second part of the discussion, which admittedly is why you're all here. So let's take a look. Again, we'll try to move. There are a lot of sources, and there are all these other meta issues we want to discuss and give justice to, so let's dive right in. Take a look at your source sheet. Source number one, really the first five sources are most, if not all, of the main sources that are in Chazal, meaning Gemaras, Tosefta, Mishnah, in Chazal that discuss the issue of women and Megillah. So this is obviously where we have to start. Source number one, maybe the most famous source, the Gemara says in the name of Shua ben Levi, Nashim Chayavos b'mikro Megillah, Sha'af Hein Hayu b'osa Hanes. Right? The first point is, from a halachic perspective, it's surprising that women should be obligated to even hear the Megillah. After all, isn't Megillah reading a time-bound mitzvah? Women are generally exempt from positive time-bound mitzvahs. And the answer is yes, they generally are exempt. In that sense, halachically, it would be surprising. But we know that there are other examples of time-bound mitzvahs that women are obligated in. We had a whole unit on this last year. I think we did two or three shurim on the overall topic of mitzvah aseh shazman grama. We pointed out that, to some extent, there are almost as many exceptions to the rule as the rule itself. And one of the reasons why women are sometimes obligated as an exception to the rule is this notion of af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. And that comes up in Hanukkah, it comes up on Pesach for the Arba Kosot. And basically the idea is, and it's a machlokes, does it mean that women were also the beneficiaries of the miracle? So when it comes to Purim, obviously, if Haman wanted to kill all the Jews, he also wanted to kill the women. And therefore, since we all benefited equally from Hashem's miracle, we should all, therefore, equally be obligated to commemorate the miracle. And some say it's even more than that. It means that in all three of those instances, not just that women benefited from the miracle, but women were the catalyst to the miracle. And of course, the easiest example of the three is Purim, because of course Esther is the star of the story. So whether it's because Esther was the star or because all women, all Jewish women, were themselves equally in danger, either way, it's clear, at least from the first source, that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Megillah. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean they should read it, they should hear it, they can read it for other people? So in source number two, the Talmud Yerushalmi formulates this idea about women being obligated, but clearly changes the focus and reduces the active participation of the women. It says the Yerushalmi in source number two, Tzarech likrosa lifnei nashim. Right? Who's the focus on here? Not so much the women, but the men. A man has to make sure to read the Megillah for women. Right? Whether you look at this as an obligation on a father or an obligation on a husband. But the focus of the Yerushalmi isn't that women actively do anything, but it does sound like, despite the fact the shift in the focus, it's much more passive than the first source, which is more active. But even so, the Yerushalmi does seem to assume that women have to hear the Megillah. It just shifts the responsibility to the man to make sure his wife or to make sure his daughter hears the Megillah. So it's a little bit of a different focus. Curious as to why that is, but still seems to confirm that there's some form of obligation. Yeah.
Is this totally out of context to say girls on the hadrasim?
We're going to get to that. We will get to that. It's a very important part of the shir, but especially more towards the end, okay? Because it's an important factor, but it's a secondary factor. But it is an important factor, which we'll get to. Now, if you look at the next few sources, Surah 3 and 4, which really go together, now we focus not so much on whether women should hear the Megillah, whether someone else has to read it for them, but what about women reading the Megillah themselves? Forget for who now for a moment, but just... So, if a woman reads the Megillah, gets the most modest, I don't mean modest in the sense of tznius, I mean like least ambitious. The most conservative approach would be, okay, maybe she can read it, but for herself. Right? Then you'd have a woman reading for other women, and then of course the most radical would be, can women read for other men, for men? So in source number 3, we start addressing these issues a little bit. Says the Mishnah, source number 3, Hakol ksherin lekrosas ha-megillah. Everyone is kosher, meaning they're technically eligible, they're suitable in theory to read the Megillah. It means, of course, you've studied it and know how to do it. It's not the easiest thing to read a Megillah. I couldn't do it. But if someone studied it and knew how to do it, anyone is potentially suitable, except for chutzmei cherush shotev akatan. Someone who's either deaf and mute, someone who's mentally incapable, or just someone who's under, let's say, bar mitzvah. Now, we're used to hearing those people grouped together as being exempt from certain things. But here, well, of course, what's the most significant part of this source? What's not mentioned? It does not say women can't do it. Hakol ksherim, except for these three people, and if you just had that source alone, source number 3, it sounds like what? Women can read the Megillah. And if you asked me, again, we have obviously a lot more sources, but if I was just looking at this source in isolation, it sounds like not only can women read the Megillah, it sounds like they can read the Megillah for anybody, not only themselves, but even for men. Okay? Source number 4 is the Gemara elaborating, in a certain sense, on this Mishnah, repeats it again. Hakol chayavin, not ksherin, but chayavin. Everybody is obligated in reading the Megillah, Mikra Megillah. Hakol ksherin, likros as a Megillah, suyimai. So this is, again, for those of you who may have learned Gemara, you are familiar with this, but for those who haven't, this is a very typical Talmudic technique. When you give a big general statement, everybody is this. So the Gemara will often ask, well, why did you have to tell me everybody is, right? You could have just been more specific. The Gemara often assumes that a kind of general phrase like everybody is coming to include someone who might not have otherwise thought. So the Gemara asks, as it often does in a million other contexts throughout the Talmud, Hakol la'asuye mai. This language that the Gemara is using, Hakol, everybody, such a dramatic language, who are you including that we might not have included otherwise? So says the Gemara, I'll tell you who, la'asuye nashim. Because you might have thought to exclude Nashim. Why? For all sorts of reasons. Maybe because they often go together with those other three who are exempt. Maybe because it's time-bound. Who knows why? But you might have thought it. So therefore the Mishnah says, Hakol, everybody's obligated in the Megillah, even women. And why are women obligated? And then the Gemara comes on here in source number 4 to say this idea that we already saw of Afhein Hayu Ba'osah Hanes. So putting these four sources together, it is unquestionably clear that women have to hear the Megillah. And it even sounds like, at least from a partial group of the sources, the women may even be kosher to read the Megillah, although we don't necessarily know for who yet. Okay, so it's very, very clear women are obligated in the Megillah. It sounds like pretty much identically to men. Just like a man has to hear the Megillah, could read the Megillah for himself, maybe could read the Megillah for others. So far, that's what it sounds like for women. Now, the one big wrench in this comes in source number 5. This is the one outlier source. Again, we're still in Chazal. We didn't even get to the Rishonim yet. Just in Chazal, Gemara, Mishnah. And this is the Tosefta, right? Tosefta is kind of a parallel text to the Mishnah, so it's very authoritative. Maybe a notch below Mishnah, but it's very authoritative. It's before the Gemara even. And source number 5 says the Tosefta. Yes, Hakol Chayavon, again with the big Hakol. But here, the Tosefta explicitly excludes women. Hakol means all men. But Nashim and others are Paturim, and in case you didn't get the message, And because women are exempt, ein motzin es harab midei chavasa. Now, they certainly couldn't read for anybody else. That doesn't necessarily mean they can't read for themselves, that we didn't see. But they're not even obligated. Okay, you're not obligated to sit in the sukkah either, you could do it. Not under the shekelul if you could do it. But yet, according to this, unlike everything we saw until now, women are not obligated to hear Megillah reading. Now, you all know from your life, your lived experience, evidently we don't recite Pasuk like source number 5, because women are always coming to the Megillah, and if they can't get to the first Megillah reading, they're hearing the second Megillah reading. Right? According to the Tosefta, none of that would be necessary. It would be nice to hear it, but you wouldn't have to make yourself crazy to hear it. Okay, so you should understand this is a dramatic source, number 5, going against everything we've seen until now. The women are totally exempt, and of course, if you're exempt, and we know this, and you know this from your, again, your lived halachic experience, we always, again, not just for women in general, we always talk about what is a person obligated for him or herself, and then as a secondary question, what can they do to be motzi other people, right? And obviously, it's built, right? So if you're not obligated yourself, that's going to make it harder, if not impossible, for you to be motzi anybody else, right? You have to be at least on the same level, right, as the person you'd be being motzi. So obviously the question of who you can read for, especially if we're talking about for other women or for men, is downstream. It's an important question, but it's downstream from the first question, which is, are women obligated? And that first question, according to most sources, seemed clear, but not necessarily according to that last source. But let's assume for now with the consensus that at the very least women are obligated themselves. Is it really true? This thing that none of you thought, I'm quite sure, before you walked into the shiur 10 minutes ago. Is it really true that the impression we're getting until now, that not only are women obligated according to most sources, but they're even able, therefore, if you're obligated, so I should be able to read for other people who are also obligated, including men. Right? That was the impression we were kind of getting. And sure enough, that's the majority view in the Rishonim. It's implied by the Rambam. Take a look at source number 6. The Rambam, when he's discussing this, just says one thing. Source number 6, Hakol chayavin b'kriyasa anashim v'nashim. Now, the Rambam doesn't say anything about who can be the Bal Korei, who can be motzi people, in the shul, going to the hospital, the first minyan, the second minyan. The Rambam doesn't say anything about that. But what does the Rambam do? He totally equates women and men. Right? The whole presentation is very short. He doesn't seem to feel the need to elaborate, and he certainly doesn't distinguish. He just says men and women are equally obligated in Megillah reading. So if all you have is this, what is the most reasonable, simple deduction? Which is like any man who knows how to read the Megillah can read it for other people. It sounds like the Rambam thinks that women could do that too. It's a deduction. He doesn't say it, but it's a very compelling deduction. But in case that's too far for you, you can't make the jump, Rashi says it explicitly. Rashi, the father of daughters. Source number 7. When we say women are obligated, says Rashi, again, you could have limited that to just to hearing the Megillah, but adds Rashi, source number 7, Ksheros Likrosa Ulahotzi Zacharim Yidei Chavasam. Wow. That's Rashi. You cannot be more mainstream than Rashi. Rashi says explicitly, once you say that women are obligated just like men, it follows that just like, therefore, a man can read for other people, women can read the Megillah in the community. He doesn't talk about numbers, but I mean, there's no reason at this point to assume there's a limit in how many men, but you can be motzi a man, says Rashi. And there are other Rishonim who say it also. I think if I'm not mistaken, either the Rashi or the Ritva, but Rashi says explicitly, yes, Alyssa. So, thank you for asking. What I want to say, it seems according to probably the Rambam too, they assume that this is a big machlokas. We don't paskin like it. I shared it with you because this is a very learned crowd, and this is a high-level shir, and we try not to hide things, and I'm sharing with you the different opinions. But they basically seem to say, we don't paskin that way. Again, that we have all sorts of conflicting sources in halacha. That's the way of the Jew. Sometimes we try to synthesize them. You have authorities who try to have their cake and eat it too. And sometimes we just reject the source if it goes against the mainstream. Here we have one on four. It's not the craziest thing to reject the Tosefta. And not just the Tosefta. Again, I will add, in this point, Alyssa, it's also the Yerushalmi, because in source number 2, it assumed that women were obligated, but it made it clear that women were obligated in a passive way. Right? Because in source number 2, the Yerushalmi said, Tzarech l'krosa lefnei hanashim. So it's true. It's also against that. But again, it's there's firm ground. The Gemara Megillah, the Gemara Erchin, that seemed to be what they are going with. Now, this again, I newsflash, breaking news. This is the majority view in Rishonim. The majority view in Rishonim Other women are that women are obligated to hear the Megillah just as much as a man, and therefore it follows that a woman could read the Megillah for anybody. Just like any other mitzvah that you're obligated in, you could be motzi other people. This is the majority view. Okay, I'm getting the stink eye from certain people in the room. I am even married to one of them. But what can I tell you? This is not me, this is the majority view. We're about to pivot, so don't you worry. The conservative people in the room, the traditionalists, don't you worry. We're about to pivot. But I'm being honest with you, and I'm sharing you the sources. Yeah.
The tune of the Megillah, how long, what's the origin? Was this...
This is probably would include this. Yeah. Yes, I think so. I know what you're getting at. We'll get to it. I know we'll get to it. Yeah, no, this is not... Mordechai Haya B'Shushan HaBira. That would not be that. I'm not saying you have to be like when we have the daughter of at least one expert Megillah reader in the room, and when I was in Baltimore, we had a different expert Megillah reader in our shul who was still to one of the best I ever heard, with all due respect to the people who read here, but the one we had in Baltimore was amazing, and he used to act out parts. So when he got to the Seuss, he was, Seuss! And things like that. Okay, I'm not saying you have to do that. That's really amazing. And Rav, if you ever come to the Gush for Megillah reading, Rav Meidan is very dramatic, kind of acting out the Megillah as he's reading it a mile a minute. I mean, it's unbelievable, again, with the tune and the diktuk. Our people are really gifted at this kind of thing. Not me. As I always tell the bar mitzvah kids, 99% of bar mitzvah boys do amazing at their bar mitzvah. They were nervous, and they had a hard parsha, and reasons, but 99% of the kids in the end do great. I was part of the 1%. I was bad even at my bar mitzvah. My parents didn't know what to do with me because you expect a kid with everyone watching and a year of preparation then doesn't do well, you would think a kid would be hurt and crushed. And my mom said the whole time I'm watching, my mom doesn't understand obviously what makes a good or bad reading, but they kept on correcting me. She knew that. And she said she kept on looking at me and I didn't seem to care. She couldn't say, what's with this kid? Everyone in the shul, I have three sons, when they got bar mitzvah, and I would tell them the story, I'm not embarrassed, as you can tell, and at one point, one of my kids, or maybe it was Aaron, probably asked my father, who also was my teacher, taught me and was standing right there, Zadie, how many mistakes did Abba make? He says, I don't know, because I stopped counting after the first Aliyah. And my mom says, I couldn't, you didn't seem to care, what was going through your head? I said, I don't remember, it was a long time ago. They said, not everyone would be good at this. But yes, you have to read, getting back to your answer, your question, you have to read the Megillah with the tune. Now, all of this was, again, I'm being honest with you, not only the first view, but the majority view. But you knew there was a but coming, and here it comes. There is a view that disagrees. It's the minority view, but, interestingly enough, it's a minority view that really shapes the whole halakhic process for the last few hundred years. And that comes in a number of sources, but for the sake of space on the sheet, I just gave you one version of it. Source number 8. Source number 8 is Tosfos, and Tosfos quotes an even earlier authority known as the Bahag, the Baal Halachos Kedolos, a very, very influential source in Halacha. For most of Jewish history, we did not have extant, the actual manuscript of the Bahag, so we had other Rishonim, the Rosh, Tosfot, people quoting this earlier authority. And now we have, through manuscript, in our generation, we're fortunate, we have a lot of manuscripts that have been discovered and edited and published. You can get an actual copy of the book, the Bahag. But for hundreds and hundreds of years, people knew about this opinion because it was quoted by some of the most authoritative people, like the Rosh, like Tosfot. And source number 8 says, the Tosfot, after having said, basically, the majority view, the women are obligated, and because they're obligated, presumably they can even read for men, says the Tosfot, source number 8, Aval Bahag, lo pasak hachi. The Bahag rejects this. The Bahag rejects this. Now, of course, the question would be, why? Why should you reject this, right? We have all these sources. They seem to be, the consensus, the majority seems to be women should be obligated. And if they're obligated, why can't they be motzi men? So the answer is, and this is what we'll spend the next few minutes trying to understand, but there's two ways to, I guess on two levels, we have to analyze this. And again, for those of you who have some level of experience in more high-level learning, especially in halacha learning, everything I'm saying is typical to halachic analysis, but I just want to give you the methodology before we dive in, which is often you are contending yes or no, mutter, usser. Again, it could be about a million things. Heter, mechira, and shemitah. It's not just a woman's thing. It could be about any issue. This is a good sukkah. It's not a good sukkah. Whatever the case is, right? So it's textual, right? Like we saw here, there's contradictory sources. So which one was the authoritative? Right? Which is the controlling source? And then, even if it's not so much textual, there could be arguments in svara, rationales. And the rationale can sometimes be more localized issue. Okay, we're arguing about Sfiras Omer. We're arguing about Sukkah. We're arguing about Nida. Whatever it is we're arguing about, okay, it's a local issue. It's a Nida Machlokes. It's a Nida Svara. It's a Kashra Svara. Or it could be a more meta question. Okay, now, I hope I didn't confuse you. I was trying to help make it what I'm about to do easier. But basically, trying to process why this very important authority, the Bahag, would buck everybody else is an important enterprise. Because before we can decide how we paskin, we want to understand what is the contours, what is the basis of the debate. What are they really arguing about? And then we can figure out who we think is right. So on one level, and this gets back to what I was asked before, the easiest thing to say is that the Bahag may just feel like the other sources are more authoritative. Right? There was a machlokes. Some sources did seem to say, right? The Tosefta seemed to say women are pater. So you could, and this probably is something you have to say, point one is just realize there is a contradiction in sources. There is a majority of sources going in one direction. Therefore, we shouldn't be surprised that a majority of authorities go in that direction. But it's the right of every rabbi, it's the right of every posek, you know, to speak their conscience. If the Bahag really felt that the Tosefta is the more correct source, he has a right to rule based on that. Okay, that's, I think, just step number one. But even that's not really enough, because we would then ask the obvious question, the next logical question is, well, why does he think that source is more authoritative? It can't be because he added up, you know, four to one, because then he would be on the losing side, or three to two even. So there must be some compelling rationale that made him disagree. So for this, we have two types of rationales that are offered. And this is going to get to your question in a moment, from a few minutes ago, which is, the most likely, and I think personally the more compelling, much more compelling explanation, is the one that he seems to have offered himself, and that's the internal issue. That there's something about women's obligation in Megillah, which we've been missing until now, which makes things not as simple as we thought. Alternatively, we could look at more meta issues, which is what you were alluding to without saying it, like Kolisha, like Tznius. And we're going to get to, we'll see all those are going to be mentioned by different authorities. But the first issue is, let's go back to Purim itself. Let's go back to Megillah itself. We have until now assumed, reasonably, I don't think we should feel bad about this. We didn't do anything wrong, although we might be wrong, but we didn't do anything wrong. We've been assuming that if the Mishnah or the Gemara says, and a certain authority paskins that way, the women are obligated in Mikra Megillah, Afhein Hayib Osa Hanes, it means the same as men. Again, Rashi couldn't be clearer, so we were in good company. But if you think about it for a moment, it's not the only way to understand this. Just because women are obligated to hear the Megillah, afein haibos anes, does not necessarily mean that they're obligated in the same way that men are. There can be different people with different levels of obligation, different types of obligation. Right? Just to point out the obvious, a man does not need the rationale of Afhein Hayib Osu Anes. He's obligated implicitly. Women would have been exempt. Comes Afhein Hayib Osu Anes and says, no, get back on the boat. You're obligated too. But who said you're obligated in the same way as men? Now, the answer is Rashi seemed to say that. The Rambam implied that. But it's not necessarily the case. Now, what I'm getting at now, to be more clear, is something that we've been kind of dancing over the last 20 minutes of the shiur anyway, which is, things like Megillah, it's not unique to Megillah, but certainly things like Megillah, there really are two components. Right? Everyone, right, plays a role. One person in a communal setting is doing what? Reading the Megillah. There's a Mikra Megillah. But what else is there? There's Shmia HaMegillah. Which one is the mitzvah? Is the mitzvah to read or is the mitzvah to hear? So, you might, whatever the answer is, until now, we didn't, A, even discuss it, but we've been assuming that whatever the answer is, it's the same for women and men, because they're all obligated. Says the Bahag, that's where we made a mistake. Go back to source number 8. The Bahag rejects everything we've been saying until now. Why? Because he says, when it comes to women, chayavin bishmiya. Says the Bahag, there's a difference between men and women. Men are obligated to read the Megillah. Mikra Megillah. Women are obligated to hear the Megillah, but they're not obligated to read it. So they have to be in shul or wherever, or in their house or in their neighbor's house to hear someone read the Megillah. But it makes sense, according to this, that a woman can't read the Megillah. The question is, can't read the Megillah for men, can't read the Megillah for other women, but can't read, at minimum, can't read the Megillah for men, which is what we're discussing now. Can a woman read the Megillah for men? Rashi says yes. The Rambam implies yes. The Bahag says no, a woman cannot read a Megillah for a man. Why? So the Bahag basically himself seems to say, because a woman does not have the same obligation as men. It's a different slash lower level obligation. Men may be obligated to read and hear. Women are only obligated to hear. So if you're only obligated to hear the Megillah, how can you be motzi me? I have a different obligation than you. I have a more ambitious obligation than you. Afein ho'e bozwanei says, yeah, women are also included, but not necessarily at the same level as men. It's a different and lower level. It's only shmia. Okay? That would be one big, big reason. Okay? Yeah, quickly. Excellent. We're going to get to it. Excellent. We're going to get to it. Oh, so excellent. Very excellent. Particularly excellent. Particularly excellent question. Better than my stink eye that I was getting from you earlier. So the answer is, how is it that if a man are obligated to hear the Megillah, read the Megillah, how does every other man, including moi, yotze? It's a good question, but the answer is just as good. How do I yotze Kriyas HaTorah every Shabbos? If you have multiple men around the table, only one person makes Kiddush. Right? Women are obligated, this is for sure, you all know this, we think we discussed this last year maybe. Right? Women are obligated at Friday night Kiddush like men. So whether it's the husband making Kiddush for the whole family or for other men, how's that working? There's this Shomei Akona. We have this idea that in halacha, if you're listening to somebody who's on the same level as you, that's the whole point, they have to be on the same level of obligation. You're listening to them, and they're having in mind to be motzi you, you're having in mind to yotzei through them, it works. Okay, so that's the Bahag's answer. Now, clearly, the other Rishonim don't hold of this whole thing. We spent the last 10 minutes explaining the Bahag, because he's so important, we have to understand him. But clearly, other people don't hold of this. Right? If Rashi says women can read for men, he clearly either holds that everyone's obligated in Shmiya, everyone's obligated in Kriya. I don't know what he holds about that. I mean, I do know, but that's not the point of today's topic. But the point is, he holds it's equal. The Bahag's Chiddush is that even though women are obligated, but it's not the same obligation. Now, as it so happens, there's like six other theories even within this, especially in more contemporary authorities, also trying to play the same, I don't mean this chas v'shalom cynically, but play the same game or use the same technique as the Bahag. This is ways of saying, yes, women are obligated, because we pass in like the majority view, but not obligated in the same way. In what way is it different? And I could give you, if we had all the time in the world, five other theories as a way of distinguishing. But the more compelling one, the one the Bahag himself said, is hearing versus reading. Now all of that is an internal Megillah issue. There are other meta issues, which other Rishonim seem to suggest, which, by the way, imply, if I have a potential Megillah explanation, but I don't use it, and I look outside some other meta issues, what does that imply? That from the Megillah per se, I got no problem. Women and men really are equal. And yet there still could be a but. So what would the but be? So here, what you're probably expecting to hear, you will hear. So for example, I'm not saying you, not all of you will like, but you will hear what you probably expected to hear at some point in this year. Sources 9 and 10. The Ritva says, you're right, really, women can read for the men. In shul. But it's not Kavodat Tzibur. It's not Kavodat Tzibur, it's not the right thing. Probably, he doesn't say the word Tznius, but it's hard to understand what Kavodat Tzibur is. It comes up in other contexts also. But it might be a form of Tznius. Or, source number 10, Tosfos, also, even a more obscure phrase, but probably means something about Tznius, says Tosfos source number 10, Derabim Zila Bei Milsa. For a woman to read in front of a large crowd, it's not right. Zila Bei Milsa is basically the Aramaic way of saying pasnished. Now, why is it pasnished? Right? Some people's pasnished is pasyuk. Sometimes that's in the eye of the beholder. But probably it means it's not Tznius. So that's one answer, right? Again, it doesn't mean you accept, you really think women and men have the same obligation. But still, for a woman to be reading for men, it's not right. Probably for these reasons. And in source number 11, the Kolbo says, Kolisha. For a woman to be singing, you know, to chant the Megillah is a beautiful thing. To do that, that could be a violation of Kolisha. So any one of those reasons, sneeze, it's pasnished, it's Kolisha, those are real values. We don't sneeze at any of those values. But it's important to know that they are much more downstream, much more secondary, and much more external than something as compelling as if you held like Shmiya versus Kriya. That would be a much stronger reason. Okay? With all is said and done, how do we paskin? Source number 12, the Shulchan Aruch. Everyone's obligated equally, men and women. V'yesh omrin, but there are those that say a woman can't be motzi a man. Who's the those that say? The Bahag. So the Shulchan Aruch first gives the anonymous majority view. Women are obligated. And if he says women are obligated, we know what that means at this point. They can even read for men. But then says the Shulchan Aruch, but yesh omrim, it's not a good idea. Now when the Shulchan Aruch brings two opinions, which one do you go like? Hold on, hold that thought. But at the end of the line, you have the Ramah, for Ashkenazim. Says the Ramah, and this gets to what Alyssa asked before. He doesn't directly answer our question, but by implication, he clearly is ruling on it. He says, Im Isha Korela Atzma. What if a woman reads for herself? She can't get the shul, but she knows how to do it. She's talented, she's musical, she knows how to do it. She should make the bracha, Lishmoa Megillah. Not al mikra, but Lishmoa. Why? Says the Ramah, because she'ena, women are not obligated in kriya samagillah, in reading the Megillah, they're only obligated in hearing the Megillah. So as Alyssa had said before, correctly, the Ramah says, if you hold like that bahag, that women are only obligated in hearing the Megillah, then the bracha should reflect that. It shouldn't be al-mikra Megillah, but should be lishmoa. So, even though he doesn't say it directly, but it's clear, it may be surprising, but bottom line, if I asked you, do we paskin like this Bahag? He's a minority view, but do we paskin like him? So the answer is from the Shulchan Aruch, we're not sure. Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions, although he doesn't have to bring both opinions, he could just rule like the majority. So even the Shulchan Aruch was a little bit cautious, brought both opinions. But the Ramah for Ashkenazim is clear. We paskin like the Bahag. Women are only obligated in hearing, and therefore, according to Ashkenazim, it would be unquestionably the case, a woman could not be motzi men in Megillah reading. You should just be aware, because we're now all much more learned than we were 30 minutes ago. We paskin that way, bottom line, for Ashkenazim. But it's the minority view in Rishonim. Okay? But it is how we paskin. Now what about for Sfardim? Turn over the page. So Yalkut Yosef, that is the current Rav Rashi, Rav Yitzchak Yosef, who himself is a tremendous gadol, and of course is reflecting his father, Rav Avadya Yosef's views, says Rav Avadya, says Rav Yitzchak Yosef, source number 13, in this case, it's clear he thinks that even the Mechaber, even the Shulchan Aruch, thinks that ideally women should not be reading for men. But you can't deny, says Rav Yitzchak Yosef, that the Shulchan Aruch was much less, you know, he was much more equivocal than the Ramah. The Ramah was clear, Chad Mashmi, women can't read for men. Shulchan Aruch brought both opinions. So says Rav Yitzchak Yosef, says his father of Avadya, for Sephardi women, ideally, they shouldn't do it for a man, but says explicitly, look at the last line. But if Taka, there was no one else who could do it, right? Imagine a hypothetical community in which all the men are illiterate or unlearned, and you have a woman who actually is much more articulate, she's much more intelligent, she can do it. Says Yitzchak Yosef, Miha, nevertheless, B'dievin Miha, nevertheless, in case where you had no choice, Hashomea Kriyasa Me'isha, a man who hears Megillah reading from a woman, Bavarai Shiyatzi Dechovasa. He's Yotze, for sure. The Eitrach, he doesn't have to go back and find some man at 1 in the morning to read it for him. So the Sfardi halacha, bottom line is, Mikra Adin, a woman can be motzi a man. It's the majority view in Rishonim. But even the Mechaber, and even Sfardi Poskim Adi Yom HaZeh are hesitant about that, but if necessary, they would rely on it. Ashkenazim, nah. Can't do it. A woman cannot read for men. Okay? Now that we spent all this time, you forgive me for we indulged this, but now that's the shocking part of the shiur. That was even a discussion, right? No one was expecting that when they walked in. But now we're ready for the last part of the shiur, which is also very, very important, which is, okay, fine. I can't read for men, and let's be honest, I don't want to anyway. Right? If I gave anyone the opportunity, you could be the Balkorian shul on Purim night, who would say yes? I mean, in all seriousness, I shouldn't be mezalzel. Maybe in certain communities, there'd be a very wonderful woman who would say, I would do it if you let me. I don't think in our shul anyone would do it, but okay. Either way, we're Ashkenazi shul, so it ain't happening here. But what about a woman reading for herself or for other women? So let's be honest. If we hadn't spent 40 minutes explaining why maybe, according to a minority view, women can't read for men, what does that imply about women reading for other women? It sounds like it shouldn't even be a question. And in fact, that is the simple view of all Rishonim, perhaps even the Bahag. It's hard to find what could possibly be the halakhic reason that a woman couldn't read for herself or for other women. not only are that implied by most of the sources, take a look at source 14, Tosfos. Even though he's worried about the Bahag, but nevertheless, Ein Hanashim Motzin Ella Nashim. Tosfos is explicit. A woman could be Motzi, other women. He doesn't start just discussing numbers. How big is the shul? How big is the group? But he says women can be Motzi, other women. Or the Rush, source number 15. Kamash Malan, Haisha Motzia Chaverta. A woman can read for other people. We saw in the Ramah that we were discussing with Alyssa's question about what's the Nusach HaBracha. What was the Ramah discussing? Now, he wasn't saying woman reading for other women. He was saying woman reading for herself. But it's clear he thinks a woman can read for herself. And what's the logical reason to distinguish? Maybe, again, I'm not, if this would offend anyone, I'm certainly not pushing this so much. But maybe you want to argue it's not sneeze for a woman to be doing it in front of the men. But it's also not sneeze for a woman to do it in front of women? I never heard of a rabbi being against, these all-women plays. So that's tsanua, because a woman's only acting and singing and dancing in front of other women. But to read the Megillah, that would be not tsanias in front of women? Obviously, that's ridiculous. I think. So it sounds, what could be the reason? But it's not so simple. Of course. It's not so simple. So why not? So first of all, I didn't put it on the sheet, but the Mishnah Brura, even though the Mishnah Brura is commenting on the Ramah, Ashkenazi Posek, and the Ramah is clear woman can read for herself, it's not, we'll explain why in a moment, but just you should be aware. The Mishnah Brura says, not only can a woman read for herself, she can read for one other woman too. But she shouldn't read for many women. She shouldn't read for many women. Okay, the Ramah says herself, the Mishnah Brura says, yeah, she can read for someone else too, but she shouldn't read for a group. Now, where would that come from? What could possibly be the issue? So there's two theories. Source number 16. When I say two theories, I mean pre 1980 and issues we're going to get to of contemporary divisiveness in the Orthodox community. I'm saying even just hundreds of years ago, just pure sources, no politics, no feminism issues, just straight halacha. So two possible issues. Source number 16 is the Karban Nisanel. This is a commentary on the Rush. Not as authoritative as the Rush, but an important, well-known source. We study them and use them every day. Says the Karban Nisanel, source number 16, Nashim Rabos, a large group of women, Ein Isha Motzian, Dezila Behu Milsa. That ambiguous phrase, which I translated as, it's pasnished. Now, in the original source, it was clear, I think, that the context was, therefore, that's why women shouldn't read, in front of men. The Karban Nisanel extends that women should read for other women. Also, it's pasnish. Now, if you say what he said, and he did say it, I probably would have to retract what I said 10 minutes ago. Why is it pasnished? So I assumed that probably meant it's not sneeze. But again, it's hard. I'm being totally sincere with you now. I don't know what would that mean to say it's pasnish, it's not sneeze for a woman to read for other women. So it sounds like he thinks Zila Bemilsa means something else. I'm not sure what it would be. We'd have to think about it, and I'm honestly not sure. There's something else that's not appropriate, even though it has nothing to do with tznius. And it's obviously not going to be called Isha if it's all women. But Karban Asanel does say, and this is what in the Shaar Tzion, that's the footnotes of the Mishnah Brura, that the Chafetz Chaim himself wrote, seems like this is what he was worried about. That the Chafetz Chaim was worried about, that's why he says a woman could read for herself, a woman could read for one other woman. Once you get into a little bigger group, and three is already kind of a group, like when we make a zimun, three is already the smallest kind of a group. Already then we have to be worried that there's one opinion out there, the Karban Nisanel thinks, pasnished for a woman to do it in a group. We don't really understand why, but that's what he says. Now, if you think that's mysterious, there's a second reason that's given in earlier sources. Source number 17. The Magen Avraham. Again, the Magen Avraham is an authority you probably are familiar with. Certainly, if you come to this year, you know, very, very important, incredibly influential Polish halachist, one of the most primary commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. We quote him and use him every day in 100 shilas. This is like as mainstream halacha as you can be. As mainstream as he is, interestingly, he, in a halachic context, he's discussing Hilchos Purim, Hilchos Megillah, women, men, da, da, da. What does he pull out as a psak source? A comment, a Kabbalistic esoteric source from a part of the Zohar. And the Zohar, in what's called the Medrash HaNelam, apparently says, without really explaining it, source number 17, the Lo Tikra La'atzma Rak Tishma Me'ah Anashim. Even more extreme than what we saw until now. A woman shouldn't read the Megillah, period. Not for herself, not for one woman, and certainly not for many women. But a woman should hear from men. Period. Now, in terms of a source, like where would the Zohar get this from? Now, in certain circles, that's even heretical. I even asked that question. I mean, where did the Zohar got it from? Like, probably from God. Like, it's the Zohar. But if you're more of a mainstream halachic person, so the answer would be, we saw it already. Source number two. Yerushalmi said, we didn't know why. We still don't know why. But Yerushalmi formulated the mitzvah that men should read for women. Now, I could also argue, maybe, even though this is very hard halakhically, but I'm just doing my best, that if you think that women are only obligated to hear the Megillah, until now we thought, well, if a woman's only obligated to hear the Megillah, that's why she can't be motzi a man, because he has a different obligation. But as long as all women have the same shmiyah obligation, if we're all equal, right, separate but equal, we have a different obligation than men, but we have the same obligation, why can't one woman be motzi other women? I think that's frankly more compelling. But it could be that the Magen Avraham and the Zohar think, once you say women are only obligated in hearing, they become fundamentally disqualified from reading for anybody, for themselves. I think that's hard to say, but evidently that's what the Zohar felt. Unless you want to, and there's no way I can know, I'm admitting, I don't know, I'm totally speculating. Unless you want to impute into the Zohar that he's really worried about tznius and other things, or I don't know what. But probably it's a very extreme view of the Shmiyah approach. Women are only obligated to hear, and therefore they can't even read for themselves. I'm not sure I buy it. And all the Ramah didn't buy it. The Ramah says woman could read for herself. She could read for at least one other woman. But at least that's what the Zohar says. And as I've said to people, I even once gave the shiur a number of years ago in my yeshiva, and I think some of the boys who correctly asked, but like, it's a very extreme view, and like from obscure Zohar source, like why should I have to care about that? And the answer is, it's a good question, but if it was just the Zohar, I would probably ignore it. But now it's not the Zohar. It's the Magen Avraham. All right, if you want to ask somebody in halakhic language who says what, in the footnotes you'll see that it goes back to some obscure Kabbalistic source. But once you have someone as central and as authoritative as the Magen Avraham saying women shouldn't read, it's not so simple just to say, well, let's dismiss it because he's only one view. Again, it is only one view, but it's now the Magen Avraham. And especially for certain communities, I'll stereotype and say more Hasidic or more Sephardic, that are very, very sensitive to Zohar and Kabbalah and stuff. So this is really going to be influential. Okay? Those are basically the two reasons. In the Chai Adam, at source number 18, Chai Adam, again, a source you're probably many familiar with, this predates the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah often quotes him. It was a very, very significant posek in Vilna. So he basically mainstreams this Magen Avraham, at least Lechachila. He says, kind of like what we saw from Rav Yitzchak Yosef. He says, ideally, a woman should be reading the Megillah. After all, me guddle from the Magen Avraham, and the Magen Avraham says not to do it. I mean, do you really want to go to sleep at night on Purim night, thinking that, you know, I read the Megillah, I feel very good about myself, but you should just know the Magen Avraham thinks you did nothing. You weren't yotze your obligation from the Magen Avraham. Right? Better, who wants to get into that kind of machlokes? You should avoid it. Better not to do it. After all, Shemiyah, again, this extreme view. But says even the Chai Adam, source number 18, the last line. What's this woman has no one to read for her? Right, Baruch Hashem, in our community and in so many modern communities now, people go out of their way to have second Megillah readings and third Megillah readings, whether it's for women who can't come to shul, people going around to hospitals and reading, and for cholim. But let's say you lived in a little shtetl, you didn't have that. You were lucky to even have one person who could read the Megillah. And she knows how to do it, and there's no one who's going to read it for her. Says the Chai Adam, if no one else could read it, Tikrahi ba'atma Megillah k'shera. And he's not embracing women's Megillah readings. But again, the Magen Avraham that said a woman can't even read for herself, and says the Chai Adam, better you shouldn't read for yourself. Don't do it, let alone for other people. But he says, Lamaisa, it's hard to swallow why. And therefore, if you really had to read it for yourself, you could. Now, I don't know if the Zohar would have said that, but the Chai Adam hedges a little bit and says that. Now we have 12 minutes left. I'm actually doing pretty good for time, considering my usual habits. But in the last 12 minutes, I want to now jump to more contemporary issues. Again, I think this is very, very important. I believe 100% in the way we just did this year, methodologically. For me just to spout out, or even to start quoting modern sources about women's Megillah readings, without you having any of the background, I would not have been doing justice to the Torah, but I also wouldn't have been doing justice to you. So now you're much more, you understand now, again, we could have spent 10 hours on the topic, but we've certainly seen quite a few sources. I think you're very well grounded more than most men, let alone more women, you understand where the topic comes from, where it's coming from, okay? Bottom line is, there's a minority view that says women can't read for men, and we pass like that minority view. Ashkenazim for sure, and even Sephardim preferably. What about women reading for herself or for other women? Logically, strictly speaking, halakhically, very hard to make a case against it. In my opinion, very hard. Yes, you have a Magen Avram, and you have a Karban Nisanel, quoted by the Mishnah Berurah, Magen Avram, quoted by the Chayyadim, nothing to sneeze at. But they really are minority views. And, I've heard better svaras. I'm not sure they're the most compelling. But again, they carry a lot of weight. So how does this translate Lamaisa, and especially in light of the social milieu in which we all find ourselves? So it's very, very interesting, and I would say maybe this will be the most shocking source that you might have seen today. Source number 19, Rav Avadya Yosef. This is Rav Avadya himself. He starts off by quoting a 20th century Hasidic posek, and not just a Hasidic posek, an arch-traditionalist, shall we say, from Baga Park. First from Hungary, and if you have to leave Hungary, at least you could go to Baga Park. The Mishnah Halachos, Rav Menashe Klein, the Rav of Ungvar, shocking to no one. He lived until pretty recently. He knew about this phenomenon called feminism and women's Megillah readings. He was not a fan. So Rav Avadya quotes him, Al minag ha-nashim she'osos minyan b'fnei atzman l'priyas ha-megillah she'ein la'asos kein. He's against it. Okay? That won't surprise anybody. But this is not even why I'm quoting him. Says Rav Avadya, Ube mechilas kvod taraso, with all due respect, Ein devarim uchuvarim. He says, I don't understand what he's talking about. What would be wrong with women's Megillah readings? Adaraba, hold on to your seats. Yesh le'odeid ha-minhag hanal. Says Rav Avadya, you should encourage women's Megillah readings. Wow. That's what Rav Avadya said. Ubalvad shemoti osad yidei chovas b'kri Megillah. Yibaki b'kriyas Megillah. Listen, it shouldn't be a joke. You have to take it seriously. You got to study. You got to know how to read it. If you read it well, said Rav Avadya, he cannot see anything against it, and if anything, he would encourage it. Now, I'm sharing this with you because it's important to know. But I'm also adding, I didn't do extensive research because I don't exactly have extensive access to like the inner sanctum of Rav Avadya. I'm not sure if he was saying this only theoretically. Were there lots of, based on Rav Avadya, are there like lots of Shas women's Megillah readings all over Israel? Not that I'm aware of. So, again, we do have this, not only with women's issues, but definitely with women's issues, where sometimes a posting might believe in something theoretically, but for all sorts of reasons, not necessarily be pushing it practically. That's important to know. But it's also important to know that theoretically he saw no problem with it. And he went further than that. Tzarech le'odeid. As far as I know, that's the strongest they'll find in writing, and in an unquestionable, mainstream gadol. You should know, I didn't put it on the sheet, I didn't have space, but Shlomo Zalman Orbach also said, Halicha Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and Ashkenazim are more strict on this question, as we saw earlier in this year. So there's Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He can't see any halachic reason why women can't read for other women. What do you mean can't see any other reason? What about the Magen Avram? Those are minority views and are not so compelling. Again, I'm not aware of any women's Megillah readings in Shari Chesed under the auspices of Shlomo Zalman. I'm not saying he really thought this was a good thing. Maybe he had other concerns. But on a strictly halachic perspective, Shlomo Zalman, like Rav Avadya, was also not a fan. Now, why might you not be a fan from a strictly halachic perspective, and how might this relate to some of the more contemporary issues? So here we're up to the last part of today's shiur. So I think it's very important, and again, we're not going to spend, obviously, this is the smallest part of the shiur, but I think it's important not to completely duck these kind of things, and that is that no responsible posseg, no rabbi, nor should any community member, for that matter, consider any issue and think about anything in a serious way completely divorced from social context and milieu, right? We're not giving a whole overview on feminism in Orthodoxy, but this is already a multi-decade phenomenon, which, at least from I wouldn't call myself an arch-traditionalist, if that's the term I use for Rav Menashe Klein, so I'm not as nearly as traditional as he is, but I'm definitely a traditionalist. And I would say it's unquestionable from my perspective, I'm just giving you my opinion, that in the last few decades, this phenomenon called feminism and Orthodoxy has brought a certain number of good things and a certain number, and not necessarily even a small number, of bad things. It's a mixed bag. Right? It's complicated. And it's therefore not a surprise that many of my rebbeim or many other big poskim are not just skeptical or wary, but oftentimes, and again, I admit that I'm kind of throwing a grenade in here and I'm letting it explode, and we don't have time to spend the next 3 hours just schmoozing. we're not in seminary anymore. We all have things, places we need to go. And I'm not trying to be mazalzel, because these things really could use more conversation. But I'm just pointing out that there are certain things, and Megillah reading might, I'm not saying it has to be, but it might be one of them, in which you might have said, listen, in another time and place, I'd have no problem with it. Like, I'm not sure if Shlomo Zalman even knew like what could have come from this. Right? He was living in his own world, maybe, you could argue. But if you're actually holding in all the other issues that are going on, I could see someone taking... And I think if you are a rabbi or a posek or a community member living in not Shari Chesed and certainly not in Mei Sharim, you have to be aware of the greater social context that things are happening. Now, you might say, therefore, given the fact that this is so such a sensitive thing already for a few decades, and let's be honest, anyone who's a serious halachist is going to have to say no to a lot of things the more progressive types want. So if I have to say no to all those other things, at least where I can say yes, I should say yes. Right? Lahavdil, that would be the way you would treat your child. I don't mean to reduce women to children. You understand that's not what I just did. Save the, you know, don't send me hate emails, okay? The point is, right, just at a chinuch perspective, right? Or for that matter, you're married, right? You can't always say no. Now, if the answer is no, the answer is no. But given that so many times you're going to have to say no, shouldn't you say yes when you should, right? So this is a svara that certain people have suggested. I think of Aaron Lichtenstein. Halacha, again, when he was asked by a seminary, and we'll get to in a second why there might be a difference between a seminary and a shul, but he was asked by women's seminaries, could they have women's Megillah readings? And Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said yes. Now that assumes two things. Number one, that you think halachically there's no problem with it, which we saw as a very strong argument. And even if you might think that there would, you know, and on the contemporary or the political side, you think either there's no worry, or even if you think there is a worry, but you think the good outweighs the bad. I could see someone disagreeing with Rav Lichtenstein. But I could totally understand where he's coming from, especially in a seminary, which is a self-contained, autonomous community. It's not breaking away from a local shul or breaking away from the men. They daven together every day anyway. So they have to go find 10 men with 100 women, you know, for the Megillah. So that's what they do on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, many seminaries. But if you don't have to, maybe it would be meaningful to do otherwise. Okay? Now, this is an issue that I think someone asked before, which is that in general we have an idea throughout the year, but it's a very intensive idea in Purim and Megillah of bigger is better. It's not always true in life. It's not even always true in davening, to be honest. But in certain types of mitzvahs, especially like this, we have an idea of either what you call presume nisa, we want to publicize the miracle, or specifically there's an idea when it comes to davening, and especially when it comes to Megillah reading of Barov Am Hadras Melech. Right? So you need a minion to read Megillah. At least men would need a Megillah. And the brachos you say after the Megillah reading, by the way, for the record, if you have a woman's reading, or a woman reading for herself even, you couldn't say those brachos. Those brachos, there are certain things that do require the minion. But the basic mitzvah, it's not just a question of minion. 10 is an absolute number when it comes to minion. But no, 20 is better than 10, and 50 is better than 20, and 100 is better than 50, and 300 is better than 100. Barov Am Hadras Melech. How far do we even go with that? In source number 20, we won't read it all inside now, but the Mishnah Brura goes so far, he thinks that that's such an important value in Megillah reading, he even considers, he has a Havamina, he rejects it, but he has a Havamina that if you live in a community, for example, such as ours, where there's multiple shuls, and let's say one was clearly bigger than the others and could theoretically fit everyone, that we would tell the smaller shuls, the shtiebels, you can't have your own Megillah reading, everyone has to come together for one central reading. Nothing with women. That is so extreme, the Mishnah Berurah backs away from that. He says, we don't go that far. But it's clear from the Mishnah Berurah, if you're one of those shuls which generally have, you know, four minyanim every Shabbos, three minyanim every Shabbos, yeah, but you shouldn't do that on Purim night, or even Purim day in theory. But certainly not on Purim night, everyone should be together. We want a big crowd. For all the downside that the big crowd can sometimes have, especially on Purim. But Barov Am Hadras Melech. So many posts have argued, given that fact, if a woman can't make it to shul, she reads for herself, the Ramah said it's okay. And if there's 10 women, maybe, who could make it to shul, maybe, we'll see. But as you know, in many communities, that's not what's going on. Right? They, Beshita, want to have their own Megillah reading because they think it'll be more meaningful, the ones who can read to read, even the ones who are in the audience to hear another woman reading for a lot of, and I'm not poo-pooing it, I'm not a woman, I can't relate. It doesn't matter to me at all that the guy reading for me is a male. It means zero to me. The gender factor of the Balkari is irrelevant to me. But okay, not everyone has to be like me. Some people, it really might matter to them. So if that, as you know, in many communities, they want to have a woman's Megillah reading unapologetically and transparently because they want the idea of a woman's Megillah reading. So one is strong. So halachically, could there be anything against that? Well, again, if you worry about the Magen Avraham, if you worry about the Karban Nisanel, yeah, maybe. But we saw a lot of poskim are not really so persuaded by that. So what else could be the problem? So say Barovam Hadras Melech. So some women will say, oh, come on, you're just pulling that out because you don't want women's Megillah readings. After all, you don't tell every man they have to go to the bigger Megillah reading, and you have nothing wrong with a woman who doesn't go to the first one. So the answer is, I think that's maybe a little bit fair, but I don't think it's really fair. It's one thing if you have an established minyan, that's what the Mishnah Berurah says. Every Shabbos, every day, the 7-8 shtibles have their minyan. To tell them they have to close up to come together, that's not comparable to women making their own minyan. Moreover, even though it's true, we're not necessarily pressuring women to come to Megillah reading. Right? If they have little kids at home, etc., for whatever reason, yes, it's true, we're going to make all sorts of a second reading and a smaller reading. But that's because people can't make it to the first minyan. But someone who could have made it, theoretically, they don't have any kids at home, or they have a babysitter, or whatever, they could have made it to the first minyan. They could have been part of the big communal thing. And to say, I prefer, again, I'm not even mezalzel in it, but however you want to define or quantify the emotional / spiritual uplifting of, I as a woman get to hear another woman reading, however you want to quantify that, but to choose that, which is not clear what the halakhic value of that is, it might be a human value, I'm not saying it's not, but it's not, I'm not sure if there's a halakhic value to it, I'm not sure. To choose that, I could be going to the main shul, but I'm choosing that over a clearly recognized halakhic value as Barovam Hadras Melech, I could see why certain rabbanim would be against that. Right? If you can't, you can't. And then once we're ready, you have to have our own reading. That's already the next question. Sure. Okay, I would have loved to come to the shul. I have no problem. I don't need to hear a woman read. It's fine. I'm happy to hear a men's read. And I'd love to be there. But I got 3 little kids. So anyway, there's 30 of us who couldn't make it to the first one. We're having a second one. Do we have to go find Plony or Almoni who already read the Megillah for the whole shul and he's exhausted and he just fasted all day, whatever. He has to come back to so-and-so's house and read it another time? I got a woman right here who can do it. Or I have 10 women who can get together and do it. So that's clearly not the same thing as choosing to separate yourself from the Barovam. Just like I think Rav Lichtenstein's psak, which I'm not saying you have to agree with, I'm not sure I agree with, but Rav Lichtenstein, who doesn't need my askama, obviously, he said for seminaries they could do it, because they're not separating. It's not like a group of women who are in the shul saying, let's make our own minyan. Our own reading. I'm not using the word minyan with a capital Mem here. They have their own autonomous group anyway. So I could hear such a difference. Now, there are other great Rosh Hashivas or Poskim, including Rav Aaron's own son, who thinks that he thinks everything I said the last 5 minutes is not compelling. And he thinks as long as the motivations are sincere, he doesn't see a reason why even in a shul they couldn't do it. Because, let's be honest, not Brovam is something, but it's not the be-all and end-all. There's other values. And a woman feeling, if she really feels this way, that she's going to be more spiritually uplifted in a woman's group, why shouldn't that be as just as important as Brovam? Now, a lot of other rabbis disagree with him. Maybe his father might disagree with him. I'm not sure. It's not clear what his father would have said. There are many people who suggest that his father only permitted in seminaries, not in communities. I know he disagrees. I'm not sure he's claiming his father agreed with him, or maybe he's comfortable arguing on his father. I'm not sure. But even so, the whole world doesn't rise and fall by the last name Lichtenstein, as much as I love them. You know, other rabbanim have a right to disagree with them. The last but not least I will mention is, why would you be against even those the second reading or even small groups? And that is what one of my rebbeim, unapologetically, has called gzeira atu feminism. Which is to say, you're right, it's not even a Megillah thing, it's not a Purim thing, it's not Barovam Hadras Melech. But we live in a very, very tricky time. And if you take a generally negative attitude toward the impact that feminism has made in the last 50 years on orthodoxy, which I'm not saying you have to, but definitely a great rabbanim would do. And the fear is, if we give a little, slippery slope, and once we allow women's Megillah readings, people intentionally will manipulate, or maybe even accidentally just get confused. Well, if women's Megillah reading is okay, the women's laning is okay, the women rabbis are okay, and before you know it, I don't know what. Right? But there are people, really responsible, sensitive, wonderful rabbis, who are very, very worried about this. And instead of, again, if you look at it, we live in complicated times. So you could say, therefore, because we have to say no about 80% of the things, they're at least say yes to the 20%. Or you could say no, given the context where there's agitating for the other 80, I have to hold strong and say no to all. I could see L'shem Shemayim people having different perspectives. The last source I'll just mention, and with this we conclude, so of course I had to go a little over because that's my minhag, but to end, it really isn't a complicated topic. Would you have wanted me to skip the last 5 minutes? I don't think you would have. But if you take a look at the last source, this is Rav Ariel. Right? We've used him in the past a little bit, not as well known in our community, though he should be. Rav Ariel is one of the major Gedolei Hador. He's probably considered the most authoritative posek in the Tzioni world, and very much a traditionalist. I'm saying this is not part of the progressive part of the Dati Lumi world. A very traditionalist, got a big hat, a long black coat, if that matters to anybody. More importantly, he knows Kol Tarkula. He's a very responsible, tremendous posek. I'm a huge, huge fan of his. So he tries to, you know, kind of compromise. And he says, Brova Madras Melech. He doesn't apologize for that. Ein Lifrosh Menatzibur Rak Kadesh Anashim Tekre'en Es HaMegillah. A woman who could come to the main minyan and is in her shul, in her community, and is choosing to be poresh from that because of this idea of self-fulfillment and actualization, and I want to hear another woman, he's not impressed with that. Against Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. Against, he thinks the Brovam is more important of a value if you really care about halachic values and religious values and not your own emotional fulfillment, which presumably that should be the hierarchy, you should be in the shul that's better. But he adds, and this is his personal opinion, B'minyan Hasheni shal imahot mitupalot b'yeladim yichola yishal ikra. Because again, once you're not having an issue of I'm breaking away, I'm choosing something over the mainstream. I have to break away anyway. I have little kids. No one's against that second reading. Why does it have to be dafka a woman? A man, why can't it be a woman? Now the answer is, it might be dafka a man because I hold like the Magen Avraham, or I hold like this. Or if you hold gzeirah to feminism, everything has to be usher. You could also disagree with him. But he tries to strike this little bit of nuanced pose. So, like so many issues in this overall parsha, it's complicated. And I could really, again, much more than other things, I really do see the more liberal approach. Again, anyone who knows me on these issues, I'm a very traditionalist. But on women's regular readings, as a halachic issue, a very, 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 very compelling case. Hold on one second, just to allow it. Now that we've learned it together, we all know even that compelling case is not universal. There are people, even on strict halakha grounds, will disagree. And even on the secondary, more meta issues, there are still reasons to be more conservative and not allow it, despite the halakhic basis. Either because, not just Rov Am is a value, but why would you choose not to have the better halakhic value? Why would you choose the thing that's halakhically good, but not as good as the first one? That's not a great thing. Or just because, again, and I could understand this, if you're constantly worried about what's lurking around the next corner, and therefore I want to shut down every possible innovation, and maybe in 100 years ago or 100 years from now, maybe I would allow it. But right now, in a contentious time, certain poskim are going to, you know, and again, I think if you have a responsible poskim and sincere people, on this issue particularly, I really could see elu ve'elu in different approaches, where I don't personally say that about other topics. Here I would, but again, it has to be done with sensitivity for the halachic process. Certainly rabbis or other people, men specifically, should be sensitive to women's feelings about this topic, especially because it really has halachic grounding. And hopefully each community with their posek figures out what is right for them. Okay, thank you very, very much.